Welcome to Our Thoughts Tonight. Join us as we chat in a mellow mood about music, philosophy, psychology, and anything else that will come to mind. Enjoy!
Our Thoughts Tonight. We are here with Zach and Sean, and this is an impromptu episode. How's it going, everybody?
Pretty good.
Fine.
Chilling. So
it's December...
18th.
18th, Friday, 2020. And what happened today, Zach?
Paul McCartney 3 was released, the album.
Today we're going to talk about the new Paul McCartney episode. I'm sorry, the new Paul McCartney album and our thoughts on McCartney 3. And we'll be back after Crucem Sanctum. Crucem Sanctum. We It's because I'm using a different program.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, because we were doing the show live before this.
Yeah,
we're back. If you didn't know, we used to record this show live on Blog Talk Radio, but now we're not live and recording on Logic, and that's what we were just talking about here. So Zach,
yes,
give me your first impressions of the album, and we'll go down track by track later, but I want to hear your first impressions of what you think.
Well, before the album even came out, I was sitting in my car going down the rabbit hole of YouTube, and he released a song the day before, and I liked it. I can't remember what it's called. I need the track list. But I was...
You don't remember what the album's called?
No, what the song... That he released before the album came out.
Oh, the one that you sent me?
Yeah, the one that I sent you.
You sent me, I think it was Find My Way.
Yeah, I thought that song was good. It made me hopeful for tomorrow. And then I heard another song in the morning, and I was like, eh. And then I got to the restaurant, and then I listened to the whole album. And I'd probably give it like a 6 out of 10, even though the guy's like, I don't know, 78 years old.
78, yeah.
And he's still writing music. Yeah, I'd fact check.
We like fact checking here.
Yeah. But yeah, I don't know. I have mixed feelings about it. There's like 5 or 6 songs that I like, I think. And then there's songs that I'm just like, yeah, I guess I'll give it a chance because it's Paul.
Yeah.
You know, because I like the Beatles.
So, Zach, can I put you on the spot?
Yeah, go ahead.
When you said you liked the first song you heard, the one that was released before the album came out?
Yeah.
Can you say why, specifically?
Because he did this thing that he used to do in the past with, like, RAM and stuff, like, putting layers of... and he did it in the Beatles, too. Like, in the end, how there's, like, a track, and then another track, another track. Like with guitar doodles, and then he was doing this surf thing where it's like, it was really cool. And then he added like keyboards. There was just layers. It started, it was simplified to just, he stopped singing. It's a cut, like a break. You think the song's done. He's like, ah, gotcha. And then it's bass and drums and guitar, super simplistic. And then it builds. And then it ends on that with all the instruments together, which is really cool.
So you gave the album a 6 out of 10. What would you give that song?
You gave the album a 6 out of 10?
Yeah.
Wow. That's generous.
Yeah. I gave that song like an 8 or a 9.
Okay. What?
Yeah. It's because I like the
An 8 or a 9?
Yeah. Well, the song that
in the grand and in the grand scheme of what music?
I don't know.
Are you listening to the same bands? Like,
yeah,
are you listening to the Beatles?
Yes. Well,
so
no.
Would you say okay, a 9 in a Beatles song would be like Julia or While My Guitar Gently Weeps? And you're saying Find My Way is on par with that?
No, okay, maybe you're wrong. It's probably a 6.
It's holy
shit.
Fuck.
Yeah, it's probably a 6 then. You're right. I don't know.
I'm sorry. That's just. That's
I think
ridiculous.
It's because I got excited and it was the first thing I heard off the album.
Oh, so the shock value.
Yeah, there was some shock value to it, and it's still festering and sitting. So,
well, maybe we should also tell the audience that you're a real diehard Beatle fan.
Yeah, I am.
Right,
like you are with the Dead, the Grateful Dead.
Not so much anymore, but yes. Yeah, right. but yeah, you with the Beatles
or Bob Dylan? You're still a huge fan of Bob Dylan, right?
I stopped listening to Bob Dylan many, many moons ago. Probably after Self Portrait and New Morning.
Okay.
He kind of lost me after that.
Yeah. He's 78 too.
Yeah. They're on the same.
They're all like the same. Keith Richards is 78. Mick Jagger's like 78. Eric Clapton's like 75 or 76 or something.
Well, you know, I also started at that time getting into classical guitar and classical music. So I turned almost entirely away from Bob.
180.
Yeah. 180. Yeah.
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 Yeah, that's crazy.
Now for me, it's Beethoven, not the Beatles.
Yeah. Different B. It's good, though. Still good music.
Killer Bees.
Yeah.
So 6 out of 10.
Yeah.
Well, you said 9 out of 10 for Find
Shock
Way.
Value. And it's the first
track. It's a Paul song. Okay.
It's a Paul song. It was released early before the album, before the day. And I'm sitting in my car, mind you, like waiting for someone for 20 minutes. And I'm just scrolling and I see it and I'm like, shock value, just like you said.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I thought so too. And then I was watching the video and then there's like the harpsichord, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, that's cool. But then I started listening to the song and I was thinking about, okay, like, let me listen to this completely objectively, which means I'm not comparing it to the Beatles.
Yeah.
But I'm also not comparing it to anything else, like anything worse.
Yeah.
So I was thinking, would I listen to this song? Would I listen to this song had I heard it on the radio and didn't know who the hell Paul McCartney was?
Yeah.
And no,
probably not.
I would not.
No, you wouldn't.
It's garbage.
That's what I'm saying. It's got. That's why I'm giving this album a chance, is because this guy's like one of the richest rock and roll stars ever. Like, his net worth is. What is it? His net worth
is like $700 million.
$1.8 billion, I think, now. Hold on. Let me see if I can find it. No, $1.2 billion.
He's worth $1.2 billion? And
yeah,
he's not,
that's his net worth.
He doesn't have one decent songwriter around him to tell him that his album's garbage?
Well, they're probably all kissing his ass. I mean, like, that's the only
answer.
That
doesn't matter. Somebody could say,
someone,
like, Paul, this shit is garbage.
Yeah, well, John's dead, man, so.
Oh, yeah, that's true. John would have said,
this fucking sucks.
This is not good, man.
Yeah. He probably would have been a lot more harsh. Not that I knew him personally, but he used to make fun of, even when they were in a band together, he'd be like, yesterday sucks. I don't like that song.
Well, I was just saying that when you were gone.
Yeah.
I was like, listening to this song, you have to remember, this is the guy that wrote Yesterday.
Yeah. Yeah.
And this is the songs that he wrote today.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know, man.
Only need a time machine.
Do you think it's possible the only reason we're listening to these songs is because it's Paul McCartney?
Absolutely.
Yeah,
there's
definitely.
No other reason why anybody would be listening to this in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
Unless they were related to Paul or whoever Paul McCartney would be if he were not the Paul McCartney.
I mean, that's definitely what you imply, Zach, when you gave it an 8 out of 10 because it's Paul McCartney.
Yeah. Generosity.
Yeah.
But there is songs on this album that I like. But I don't think I liked them definitely not because of the lyrics. I would rate the lyrics like overall, like probably a 1 or a 2 out of 10. I don't like them. He repeats himself a lot.
What were you calling them? You're saying they're like grandpa rhymes or something?
Yeah, just like
burst and worst.
Yeah, well, the thing that me and Murat were talking about earlier is that John and Paul would always use opposites to rhyme with things like you stop, I go, hello, goodbye, like stuff like that. But I feel like the older that Paul McCartney's the older that he's gotten, they've become a lot more obvious and kind of annoying. I don't know.
Yeah.
And they're not meaningless lyrics.
It's like beginner poets using love and dove.
Yeah. Or above, shove.
So here's a question for you, Sean. We've talked about this before, not on the podcast, I don't think.
Bless you.
But so what makes, I mean, in any form of art, and this includes Paul and Bob Dylan and any musician, any artist, any writer, anything, any form of creativity, how come there are the, like, the grand masters that continuously progress and what was the word we were using to explain this?
Stagnate?
No, not stagnate, but certain artists progress and others don't.
Others sort of become complacent.
Yeah, complacency, yeah. What would you say is the reason behind that, in your opinion?
It must come down to the individual. And to a certain extent, I think part of that is also the individual's response to the public. There's many examples of once poets, writers, artists, musicians become famous, they tend to slack off a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And it also, age does the same thing. The radicals of youth become the conservatives of old age. That's not always true. There are some great examples of artists that just progressed through their entire lives, became better and better and better. Giuseppe Verdi's last operas, when he was almost 90, they were better than his first efforts. There were great operas throughout Verdi's career, great operas. But his last ones are really quite astounding. His Shakespeare ones that he did with Buoyotto, Falstaff, Otello.
I like this song.
Right.
Yeah.
And also William Butler Yeats progressed, the poet, the Irish poet. He progressed through his entire life as well. Beethoven wrote his best. Well, Beethoven was out back and forth. When he could make money, he did. And he wrote some incredibly bad stuff during the Congress of Vienna in 1814. But he followed those up with the Ode to Joy and the Missa Solemnis.
Mm-hmm.
And also his last string quartets, which are, he was moving beyond this world in those works. Bach was writing
The Art of Fugue,
the Mass in B minor, when he was 65. And so these are artists that grew their entire lives. Other examples, the opposite way, William Wordsworth, despite writing unbelievably great poetry when he was young, became a conservative as he got older and his poetry fell off.
So what type of conservatism would you say, or a conservative in what sense?
Well, Wordsworth became politically conservative.
Oh, so his poetry became conservative because of that, and
partly because of a popular appeal. The more people praise somebody, I think it goes to some artist's head, and other artists just kind of shrug it off. Verdi was great, you know. Verdi's first operas were booed off the stage, and he decided he wasn't going to write for the public anymore.
Uh-huh.
He was going to write for himself. The fact the public liked those works, it was all the better because he became a great rich old farmer who was able to give a lot of money to charities in his old age. Mm-hmm.
So what do you think that, looking back at everybody that you mentioned and looking at Paul now, let's say 100 years down the road, somebody's listening to this album and then they listen to Hard Day's Night, or they listen to Sgt. Pepper.
Or Ram
even. Yeah, even through, you could say, like, some of the songs in the 80s with Wings, in the 70s especially. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, those are they're not the Beatles. They're not Beatles good, but they're good.
Yeah.
And they're they're even more elaborate than Beatles songs. So a little more complex, better musicianship in terms of Paul, or better song writing in the sense of like complexity for Paul. Mm-hmm. But amazing, like fun to listen to, iconic. What do you think people will look at Paul and say, like, in the trajectory of his lifetime, what the hell happened? Like, what would they say for both of you guys?
Or if...
like, they're not just... Are they just going to say he got old?
That could be it. Or maybe he just got content. Maybe he's not writing for people. He's just doing it because he's like, I've already achieved so much. Like, the fact...
Why bother?
I know, but he's, if you think about it.
Well, he's a musician.
He's a musician, for one. No, for one, he's fucking Paul McCartney.
Yeah.
So, like, we're already huge fans of him. Like, even though this album isn't up to par of what we'd expect because he's, like, one of the most famous musicians ever and we look up to him, you know? Like, this album sucking doesn't change the fact that we still like Paul McCartney. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But I know that the album sucks. I would feel bad for someone that someone in this year who's getting into Paul McCartney. This is the first thing they listen to, because it might steer them away from missing out on a bunch of great things.
All right, you know. No, I agree. That's a
but 100 years from now. Yeah, if I was someone that heard it 100 years from now, or probably would I'd probably do what I did with Metallica. Like, I started from the newest album. And then I went backwards.
But you see, that you're talking about Death Magnetic in 2008, right?
Yeah, that was really good.
That's stuff. Actually a good album.
Yeah, it was.
It's not like up to par with Ride the Lightning, mm-hmm. or And Justice for All, or mm-hmm. Kill 'Em All, or Master of Puppets.
Yeah.
But, or even the Black Album.
Yeah. All those are great albums.
But
different, though.
It's listenable, and it has, like, you know, it's moments where you're like, this is Metallica. Yeah.
It's not cringeworthy.
Yeah. I saw them on that tour, so maybe I'm biased.
Yeah.
But
no,
you listen to them now. Like, I listened to, what was the other one called? The newest one. Mm. Just came
when
out
they're
like
playing
2 years
acoustic.
Ago. Moth to Flame was on.
Oh,
there.
Moth into the Flame.
What's the album called?
Hardwired to Self-Destruct.
Yeah, that's garbage.
Yeah.
Not listenable. There's like one good riff in the entire album.
It's like butt rock. There's that one song that was dedicated to Lemmy, but it sounded like a motor breath. Just open, it was just fast. That was it. That was the only thing. But it was cool, I guess. But I don't know. Now Lars doesn't have a ride and uses too much China, and they're old. And now what they're doing is, sorry, I'm going on a rant.
No,
what they're doing is they're taking like all of their old songs and like making them acoustic versions of them.
Yeah, I saw that, and that sounds cool.
Yeah, it is.
Because they're not trying to catch up with their 18-year-old selves.
Yeah, but at the same time, some of those songs that they chose, I'm like, dude, just leave it alone. You're gonna ruin this song for me. You know.
But they understand that it's a new take on something. They're not like,
because they're not getting any younger.
When you're trying to rehash something, let's say, especially, I mean, I look at all thrash metal, for instance, mm-hmm. and the genre is dead.
Yeah. It's we
like,
knew that when we were
like
playing it.
It's like playing swing. Or, mm-hmm. I mean, okay, swing is timeless.
Yeah.
But like...
but at a certain point, it died off.
It's like, to be a serious thrash metal musician, mm-hmm. to me, is like, if you were to start a swing band today and expect to get the notoriety that Lady Gaga and Katy Perry mm-hmm. are getting.
Yeah.
Because you think it's still relevant. It's not.
Valid.
It's relevant to the people that are stuck in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, like, with Paul McCartney and what you have with Metallica in Hardwired to Self-Destruct, it's this Ouroboros. Mm-hmm. It's like that snake eating itself, you know?
Yeah.
They're trying to catch up with themselves
mm-hmm.
because they know that, okay, if I can tap into what I was doing, or their people are telling them, like, oh, I love Hard Day's Night, or I love Kill 'Em All.
Mm-hmm.
They have that in their subconscious that they're competing with their
best
competition.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's themselves.
I feel like, on this album though, like he's like, oh, I just see, this is a song I was talking about, but the lyrics aren't great, But the fact that he's playing drums, and I think it was the video. The videos that he made.
The video's cool.
All the videos that he made so far that I've seen are pretty cool.
I like the art.
Cool.
I like the videos too, yeah.
Yeah. And that was one thing that compelled me to be like, oh, okay. You know? But I feel like he didn't... The diddles and stuff, like the guitar, whenever he's playing like just acoustic guitar and he's singing, you know, and but he's doing... The what's that guitar style picking? The thing he does with free or not Freebird?
Oh, like the Travis picking stuff.
Yeah, he does the Travis picking stuff. When he's doing that, it seemed like for me that he wrote 3 or 4 songs on this album, and then the rest of the songs he made up to put on to make an album. You know,
like filler.
Yeah, filler. Because that's the vibe that I got after I listened through all of it. I was like, oh, this song's good. That's the first song. And then it's like 3 songs of filler and then another good song and then 2 songs of filler, another good song. And I feel like that's what he did. And I don't think he did it by himself. Like, he probably did play it all by himself, but I feel like he had help in production.
Well, it sounds like a lot of computer stuff, too.
Yeah. Like the hi-hat thing, that's not real. He's just going 1, 2, 3, 4, but it's going, it has an extra... There's an extra hi-hat hit in there, too. I don't know, man. I'm just being very...
I had the same criticism when the album 13 came out with Black Sabbath. Like,
oh, yeah, that was...
And, like, the songs actually were reminiscent of earlier Sabbath. It was not the songs that I had a problem with.
Was it
actually,
Ozzy's
I didn't like
auto-tune?
The songs. I think that it still was, you know, it resembled Black Sabbath, even though, like, you're not going to get On Cocaine Volume 4 Black Sabbath, right?
Yeah.
Because that's impossible.
Yeah, snowblind.
I mean, Ozzy Osbourne's like, what, in his 80s almost. He's probably almost as old as Paul.
I don't understand how he's outlived so many people.
Yeah.
He's been pickled.
Yeah. He's got young kid's blood, dude.
It's ridiculous. Anyway, so like with Black Sabbath, when I heard the album, I was like, okay, this is reminiscent of Black Sabbath. Mm-hmm. They're trying, at least. They're not like really... Because I think Tony Iommi's incredibly humble. Mm-hmm. And I think that kind of... The riffs, at least, sounded like Black Sabbath. But the tone, like Sean said, it was like amp
like this
modeling.
Reminds me of Wings.
I thought this kind of sounded like Wings, too. It's from it's that part in Hard to Tell or whatever.
Yeah.
But so the guitar tone sounded like amp modelers and overly compressed and too loud files, because that's what people like nowadays. But it just didn't sound good. It doesn't sound good. It sounds fake.
It wasn't as natural. It was a lot more forced.
Yeah.
That's the riff I was talking about.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Sounds like a surfing.
Tokey.
Yeah. You're like, no.
Well, getting back to the question of whether or not people will, and we're going back a long way, but whether or not people will listen to this album 100 years from now, they will listen to it because it is Paul McCartney.
Yeah.
If it was anybody else, they probably wouldn't listen to it.
And probably the only reason why they heard about Paul McCartney is because someone...
That's a stain.
Well, no, but that's the way artistry works, because a critic, music critic or literary critic, and when I say critic, I don't mean thumbs up or thumbs down. I mean somebody who studies somebody's collection of works, an opus, to see...
Their anthology and discography.
And just study it and see how they developed as an artist.
Mm-hmm.
Look at the works individually, how they're constructed. And a critic in the original sense is somebody who enlightens.
Mm-hmm.
If I write an analysis of a short story or a poem or a painting or a piece of music,
mm-hmm.
and I'm not necessarily giving thumbs up and thumbs down, but leading the listener, the reader, the watcher through that work of art to help them understand it, that's what a critic does. And I think critics 100 years from now will take all of McCartney's work, including all his work with the Beatles, all his work with Wings, and they will try to put this album into context with that whole collection of works.
Mm-hmm.
And they will probably... I've only listened to a couple tracks of it. When I came in, Murat, you put on something. I mm-hmm. listened to it and made some comments, but I probably won't listen. I'm not a big fan. You're not invested into it. Yeah.
I'm only listening to it because I had high hopes.
Right.
I don't know why.
Because you're a big Beatles fan, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Well, it's because it's Paul McCartney, and this year hasn't been the greatest year. I was looking forward to this album, like, as soon as it was announced. I was like, oh, cool. Something good in 2020. And then the first person I call is Murat, and I'm like, dude, Paul McCartney 3. He's like, let's hope it doesn't suck like the last one. I was like, yeah, me too.
Well, actually, it's kind of good because for one, people are just, I'm happy, and myself included in this. Yeah. I'm happy that he's making music.
Yeah.
He's able to make music. He is older. And he's a legend. And
maybe that's why, too.
Let's say it makes him happy. That's good. And I did, like, read through the comment section in those videos, that the video you sent me, and mm-hmm. people are very happy about it. And that's exactly the sentiment that they're getting, is that, oh, you know, Paul swept in with McCartney 3 to save 2020. It's been such a shitty year. Yeah. And that's awesome, because that's the point. I'm coming at it from a different point of view, and nothing I say means shit. So, I mean, that's fine.
Yeah.
I'm just an angry Beatles fan.
Yeah, but a lot of people, you know, a lot of people have, that emotional response. It's 2020. COVID's been.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure there's a song in here about COVID.
Really?
Well, subliminally. He doesn't say COVID-19 or the vid or anything like that, but.
So there's that emotional response to the album.
That's one of the songs
due to
I like.
The context in which it's been released.
Yeah.
The environment in which it's been released.
I think it's what he said is just to put out something good and happy. Like, he's obviously not fucking doing it for popularity anymore. If the guy dropped, like, anything, they'd be like, oh, Paul McCartney did that. You know what I mean? Whether it's a pen or a quarter or an album or whatever.
Well, that begs the question, what does he feel about this work? Does he think it's good?
I think...
I think he thinks... I don't know. I don't know what he thinks. I'm not Paul McCartney, but I think he's just old and content. I don't think he cares about what people think anymore. He's just doing it for...
Well, then why make an album?
I don't know. Probably because he's trapped in his house full of band gear and doesn't have anything else. Like, what do you do when you've only been doing one thing your whole entire life? Especially if you're in quarantine and you're surrounded by instruments. Right. I would write an album. But I don't have that much free time on my fucking hands.
It seems... that on some level that maybe, yeah, you're right. He obviously still plays music, whether he actually enjoys playing music or not.
Yeah.
Well, the fact that he put it on an album, I think, is very commendable. He doesn't have to.
He doesn't have to.
That's what I'm saying. He doesn't have to anymore.
Maybe he does, though.
His net worth.
Maybe he's contractually obligated to.
Yeah. Maybe he was like, man, this is your shit.
Because, I mean, okay, so it's not Universal that's pumping it out. I think it's Apple. Yeah. But if Apple is an entity, there's probably investors.
Yeah, there's got to be.
And if there's investors in Apple, not Apple like Macintosh or, you know, not that Apple, but Apple, the Beatles.
The record company.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's still Apple that he's releasing his shit with.
Mm-hmm. Probably.
I don't know. You should check that. I don't want to come off like a total idiot.
So the board of directors are at Apple. They're all hammering their shoes on the table going, we want an album.
Yeah, because it probably causes a spike in sales, realistically. And how many times can you remaster a Sgt. Pepper?
Well, certainly people are going to listen to it because of Paul McCartney.
They'll probably still be remastering Sgt.
People buy it because of Paul McCartney.
We've been listening to it all night.
Yes.
Every time we stream it, you know, it adds to the play count, which adds to the royalties. But I mean, that could be a possibility. But and you know, he's like, "Oh, I gotta release another album. I guess I better put some songs together, and then do the old 1-2 on the piano, and then have a 2-4 song on the guitar, and then slap some parallelism on some lyrics, and then sing it half-assed, and put it through the compressors, and crank it out."
Capitol Records.
Oh, he's on a part of Capitol still currently.
Yeah,
that's why he released an album.
Release on December 18, 2020, by Capitol Records.
They probably got him by the balls.
Well, it serves a continuation to his two solo albums, McCartney and McCartney 2. Like those albums, McCartney 3 features McCartney on all instruments. Someone's slamming doors.
Yeah. Anyway, I don't know. I'm obviously
he's probably
biased.
Inclined to do it then. Or maybe he's the one that approached Capitol Records.
This to me sounds like somebody that maybe enjoys a few things about this album because they did it. They have that bias.
Yeah.
But as a whole, they probably... I don't think... it would be insane. Like, if you listen to this...
Uh-huh.
If you wrote... let's say you wrote, recorded... and were a part of, let's just say, the White Album. Uh-huh. And you knew you were a part of that creation process and how fucking legendary it is. Uh-huh. Or any of their albums, but I'm just using this as an example. And then you did this and you listened to this. And inevitably you would compare yourself. You would not be happy with this album. No. You would think.
Now that you said that, it gave me an idea. Like, what if I put on shuffle this album with Beatles and Wings and see if it could even correlate up to par with what he's done in the past and currently? Most likely not, but...
But then again, throughout the 70s and the 80s, there was a lot of filler in his shit, too, and he probably thought that was good.
Yeah.
Do you think part of it is also the connection to that fairy tale, The Emperor's New Clothes?
I'm not too familiar with that, to be honest.
I thought you were going
to
say Emperor's New Groove, the movie.
So basically, he's given these new clothes, which are no clothes at all.
Okay.
But everybody praises him because he's the king.
Oh, wow.
So is that the case with Paul? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
That's what
sounds
I'm asking.
Like it. Yeah, sounds very similar.
So people like the album
but he's
because
also,
it's him.
Well, I'm not sure how many people have said they like the album. I haven't seen any critiques of it. Or
a lot of the YouTube comments that I saw were nothing but positive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how much of that is just biased because Paul
McCartney?
Completely
biased.
Yeah, it's just because of Paul McCartney. Like, I'm not going to be writing YouTube comments because then I'll probably get shunned and hated on by everyone that's biased.
Well, I'm going to admit here, like, I don't think anything I'm saying here is scientific or deduced, like, through any thought. I'm coming today. I'm claiming complete emotional responses to this because I think that's where it is. But maybe not, because I'm looking at it from somebody that would like it, genuinely like it if it was good.
Yeah.
Whatever good means. To somebody else, it might be good. But to me, it's not good. Like, we could go track by track, and I can tell you what I think is good and bad about it.
Well, you know, that goes back...
I can tell
you
the ones I think that are good. I got the list right here.
That goes back to the whole question of... Some people respond to art emotionally, and some people respond to art not only emotionally, but also objectively.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They look at it, and they go, why is this good?
Yeah.
Or why doesn't this move me?
Yeah.
And I've had conversations with people who say, well, no, art is just like, you know, putting down what you feel. That's it, right?
Uh-huh.
But I'm of the opinion that every art you can analyze from an objective point of view of whether it's good or bad. There's criteria which makes art good or bad. What makes a painting good or bad? That criteria on the surface changes from period to period, from culture to culture.
Yeah.
But the essentials are the same. The ideas of unity... Mm-hmm. For instance, that never changes.
Yeah.
And so I wonder how many people are responding positively to this because it is Paul McCartney, and they have an emotional response to Paul McCartney, but they haven't
say
stood
85%.
Back and, yeah, they haven't stood back and looked at it as objectively as possible. If there was a blind listening test.
Or maybe it's because we're musicians and we're really critical on ourselves. That could be a factor. Like, we're not just people that only listen to music. We listen to music and we all play instruments. And we all, like, we appreciate music on a different level.
Yeah.
Well, that's certainly true.
Yeah.
Musicians
and we're not the average person listening to the radio while they drive their car. And, oh, that was a good tune. And then just, like, doesn't affect. It's in one ear and out the other. I've been listening to this album pretty much all day, trying to find reasons for me to be a lot more happy about it. And I've only noticed like tiny little things that like a musician would know. I'm like, oh, that guitar slide in the back was pretty cool.
As a whole,
I like the layering on like him playing organ and then guitar and playing drums. I like that he did all of that. I'm glad that he came out with another album, but it did not. Did not meet my criteria bar.
I think it's very commendable to come out with another album.
Yeah, and he's 78 years old, man. Yeah. And say Paul McCartney knocked on the door right now, and he's like, want to jam? I'd still say fucking hell yeah, dude.
Oh, yeah, I'd be like a schoolgirl.
And then I'd be the first one to tell him, like, dude, that new album you made?
You guys would be drooling.
I like four of the songs that you made on that new album. I was like, the rest, dude, it's kind of shit. I'm sorry. And then I wonder what his...
Well, no, would you really say that to
yes,
him?
Yes, I would.
Would you
really? I would have to. He's like, oh, would you go see my new album? I'm like, yeah,
I
like...
I got a story for you.
Okay.
Finish your thought,
though. I don't know. I would tell him, I'm like, what's your... And he probably asked... I want to know what his response would be if I said that, you know, because everyone's... I don't know. Like, I love the guy just as much as the next guy or girl or whatever. But I feel like everyone is just like his family probably. None of them. I don't know if any of them are musicians, but they're probably like, he's like,
I think his son is.
Yeah, he's like, oh, what do you think about that? And they're probably like, it's great. Because they probably one don't play music and like they just want to get the fuck out of the studio because it's their dad. You
he
know?
Should have us in the room with him.
Yeah, like you should do more fills.
We'd end up like okay, so let's say the three of us hypothetically are in a room with Paul McCartney for a month and he's trying to write an album. By the end of that month, he would come out with something close to a Beatles album.
Yeah, probably
because of our comments.
Yeah,
but okay, so. Let's take a quick break, and I got a story for you. Back and I've got a story because and Zach, you said something like you would tell him, right?
Yeah,
like you would want to hear for one his point of view.
Yeah, I would want to hear what his response is if I was like, hey, I'm a huge fan of yours, but I'm not a huge fan of your new album. I like four songs out of the 11.
Yeah,
and I tell him why.
Okay, yeah, and Sean, you were saying, are you sure, would you really tell him, right? Is that what you were saying? So come 2012, I believe, it was 2012 or 2000, yeah, it was 2012. Zach and Cody and the other Zach and I, we went down to California to see three of our favorite bands playing the same show together because I had this dream that I was at a show of one of those bands. One of those bands were Warbringer.
Mm-hmm.
That was the one that I saw in my dream. And Warbringer had just came out with a new album.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like 21 years old, like super duper excited about it because I loved their last two albums up to that point.
Yeah, you showed all of us that band too.
Yeah, I think so. Or Zach showed it to me.
Yeah, you showed me anyways. I'll speak for myself.
Yeah. Anyway, so we all got tickets and we fly down and then we're down in Anaheim.
Yep.
like the third day, last, the second to last day of the trip, day of the concert, and I'm like, let's go to the arena early because we might catch them pulling up. I mean, the show's at 8 o'clock. We're talking maybe noon. Mm-hmm. So we're there 8 hours before the show, just sitting in the parking lot. First people there besides these two Hell's Angels, they're smoking pot in the parking lot.
And they had a case of beer and a big ounce of weed. And we were
we had the beer. They didn't have beer, so we traded beer for
Weed. That's what it was. Okay. Yeah, he's right. But we just hung out with these two random dudes you never met, and we're all just like smoking and drinking, and we're the only ones in the parking lot. At first, it was weird because like they were staring at us, we were staring at them. There's only one car, and we're on foot. We walked everywhere, so it's just a big empty parking lot.
Empty parking.
You couldn't avoid eye contact, even if you wanted to, just because it was like.
I mean, like it was like us and then them.
That's it.
Yeah. The asphalt wasteland.
Yeah, exactly.
In the Anaheim Angels Stadium parking lot.
Yep.
But anyway, so we're waiting, and then the buses roll up. Like, come 4 hours later, we've been there drunk at this point, a little bit tipsy.
It's cool.
And I see the Warbringer bus pull up, and I see their lead singer, and still there's nobody in the parking lot. Except for us and the bands now. So I was like, hey, John Keevil, blah, blah, blah. And he hears, and he like walks up to us. And I was like, can I get a photo? And he's like, for sure, man, for sure. And he like comes around the fence, and like we all take photos and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, I'm such a huge fan of your first two albums. But this recent album that came out, I hated it. I thought it was complete garbage. And he was like, really?
And yeah, he did tell him that.
I was like, yeah, I thought it was awful. Like, what were you guys thinking? And he was like, well, I liked it. I swear to God, that's what he said. He kind of got pissed and walked away. And then he got dumped later that night. We were like, he was walking around the show after the show, and we see him and his girlfriend,
Courtney Cox,
get in a fight and break up or something. It looked like it, at least. And it was a pretty big show, and they're a relatively big band in that genre. But
yeah, and we saw. It was cool because we saw Mile Petroza.
Yeah. He was really nice.
He was, it was funny because like when we called, we were like, Mile, one of you guys yelled at him. And this guy's like wearing a hood and he's running. Like,
through the parking
lot. Empty parking lot. He's wearing like gym clothes. And we said his name.
Exercising before the show.
Yeah. And then we say his name, and he like looks. And then like as soon as he looked, he made eye contact. It looked like he was about to keep running. And he's like, it's just them. It was the same situation that we were in prior.
Oh, there's nobody else.
Yeah, there's nobody else but us and then Mile Petroza with the other two dudes. And then he comes up and he talks, and then
we got photos with him too.
Yeah, we got photos with him too. And Zach Potter was not wearing any. He wasn't wearing socks or shoes. And I was like, what the? It's so random. He's like, He's like, I should have worn my socks and shoes. I just took a picture with Mile Petroza.
Should have worn a tuxedo.
Yeah.
It was cool. He was really nice. And the Warbringer guy was, I don't want to say he was nice. He wasn't mean, but I think he got pissed.
He got offended. I think that was just a shitty day for him in general. Because one, he had a fan that was like, hey, I love your work.
I wasn't that crass about it, but yeah.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, I love your last two albums, but this album sucks ass. What are you guys thinking? And then later, he gets dumped by his girlfriend. He's like, what the hell's going on with my life?
A bad day.
I mean, I didn't say it sucked ass. No, that's a stupid criticism. But I didn't think it was great because it didn't hit hard. The other albums hit hard.
Yeah.
And this one was like, you know, they're washed up now.
Well, nobody likes to be criticized.
Yeah, that's right? True.
All of us take...
But don't some people like constructive criticism?
Constructive criticism,
yeah. We hope that... When I put poetry on all poetry, I get some comments, and I take them all seriously. But I'll tell you, when I sometimes give comments which I think is constructive, some take it very well, but others lash out in response. And one can understand that.
Yeah,
I'm not criticizing them for doing that. One can understand because nobody does like to be criticized. But if you voice your criticism with specific reasons, objective reasons why, you know, it's not hard hitting, why not? Now, that would be my question. If I was him in that situation, I hope that I would have the presence of mind and the courtesy and also just the simple desire to ask, how come? What do you mean, like, not hard-hitting?
Yeah. Right?
What do you mean by that?
Yeah, exactly. And you can learn from it.
Right.
Yeah. From somebody that's taken the time out to listen to something you've done.
And obviously you listen to a lot of their albums.
Yeah.
But most of us don't have that presence of mind or the
immediate offense.
But it also takes humility.
Yeah.
To respond that way.
Yeah, I didn't think. Okay, so I don't want to rag on the guy. He was probably in his mid 20s at the time.
And their tour bus broke down before.
He was probably pissed about that too.
Yeah, their tour bus broke down on the highway before they even got to where we were at. They were late, so I'm pretty sure he was mad about that. This was just like a bad day.
And we have to also bring to mind that they're probably used to getting nothing but praise.
Yeah, but I think since we're talking about Paul McCartney, I think. Paul seems like a very humble person. Like if you go back and look at interviews and stuff that he's done, they're like, it's Paul McCartney. He's like, I'm just a guy. Like, I play music. He's like, I'm not that good. He's like, my stuff's eh. Like, that's how he is. He's like us, you know? And I think that's one of the reasons why I like him.
Because he's humble. I don't agree with that, honestly.
Really?
I don't think he's like a complete like Yngwie Malmsteen arrogant bastard. Even though nowadays Yngwie, at least in the last 2-3 years that I think I've seen some of his Twitter posts, he seemed to humble. But you know, Yngwie through the 90s and the 80s was known as this like, you know, really asshole of a guitarist, even though he had the skills to back it up, you know, and
I think
the technical skills.
Yeah. But I feel like for Paul, like not when he was in Beatles era. He was like an excited kid. I'm talking about like now when he does interviews.
I'm looking at it now and I see Paul now.
Yeah.
And I'm going to, you know, I think he seemed more humble back then to me.
Really?
Yeah. And then because he was a kid, he was like
innocent.
A deer in the headlights. I've heard Ringo say this. I've heard all those guys say this, that they didn't know, like, it started, like, Beatlemania started, and then they just got swept up, like, they didn't have time to think about it.
Mm-hmm.
So when he stops to think about it, right before Wings, when McCartney 1 comes out, and Let It Be, actually, had just released, and then McCartney 1 comes out, and mm-hmm. they have, like, the Disillusion or whatever, they split, officially.
When did Ram come out? Did that come out after McCartney?
73, I think.
So like way after?
Two years after McCartney 1.
That's my favorite Paul McCartney album.
That's a great album. Anyway, so like they come out, he comes out with McCartney 1, and you can see like he makes a note in that album. Like he makes really condescending comments about the Beatles and his life with the Beatles. Mm-hmm. And I'm not judging Paul as a person. I mean, I probably would be 10 times, 100 times more arrogant than he is now. But I think that he's always had this sense of like, this is based off of like Harrison statements and John Lennon statements. It's like, he always wanted to be the guy until the shit hit the fan. And then like, he'd be like, hey, John, can you go talk to the Maharishi?
Yeah.
Cause he's giving us a hard time.
Yeah.
So John had to pick up all the dirt, you know, but Paul wanted to be the guy.
Yeah.
And, you know, after, what's his name, Brian Epstein died, he pushed them in ways that Paul wanted to go. And they didn't necessarily want to go, like with Magical Mystery Tour. That was all Paul's idea.
Yeah.
And so forth. And they had a lot of, like, I saw a video, and maybe this is all, like, projection or, like, psychoanalysis that's that has no scientific, you know, ground.
Yeah.
Or it's not sound, but you see this video of Ringo and George and John in the room, and it's like clearly before a recording session, and they're having a good time and like laughing and shit, and then Paul walks in and all their faces just drop. Like, that's like, oh,
time to get serious.
Yeah, here, corporate's here, you know.
Yeah.
So I think that he kind of had that sense, and then like through those documentaries and Wings, mm-hmm. like the first 5 years, 6 years, Wings was around. He was a total asshole to the band members. Not in a, maybe not in an emotional sense. Like he wasn't berating them with crazy like things. Like he wasn't saying crazy shit to them or being abusive emotionally, but he didn't think he had to pay them for some reason, because you know he wasn't making any money. But he didn't have to make any goddamn money. He's a Beatle.
Yeah. He's and already got are, royalties and
these are
many albums.
Stand-in musicians that work as, I mean, their work is being a musician on minor albums so they can scrape by.
Wasn't there an album, I think it might have been Ram, where there was a bunch of musicians or something that were supposed to play with him on the album, and then they just up and quit.
Band on the Run.
It was Band
on
the Run.
They were all in Africa, and they just abandoned because he was being an asshole.
Yeah.
Except for the drummer, I think. He stayed. Yeah. And then he left the next album because he had the same shit.
Yeah.
So, I mean...
I guess you're right, though.
He was trying to somewhat run away from Paul, but he was inevitably still Paul. He couldn't run away from his ego.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's not like he's a megalomaniac or anything realistically, but I mean, he's a Beatle.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I don't think that he's completely, I don't think he's like this Jesus Christ figure of humility.
No, I don't think so either.
The problem of fame.
Yeah.
I just think that he's a lot more humble now that he's older. Like he's probably matured.
He probably realizes his mortality.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but also when you were saying that, like he was in the first McCartney album or whatever, like kind of being snide or making references toward the Beatles and stuff like that. That was like a back and forth thing too between John and Paul, like writing song. Like it's funny because they're like, I don't care about that guy because they broke up, but then here they are writing songs at each other,
and competition.
But about each other, like. That song by John Lennon, How Do You Sleep? What's that line?
The only thing
you done was yesterday.
Yesterday.
And since then, it's just been another day, which is a song that, another day that is a song that Paul McCartney wrote.
Wings,
with Wings. And Paul made, I can't even reference his because I'm more of a John, like, I like John's solo career. A lot more. I can't really say that.
Do you think it was right to make their feud public like that through their songs?
I think
it helped album sales.
It helped. Yeah. Well, it helped their companies, you know, or their record labels.
What was that?
I don't think
what was that myth from a long time ago? Paul was dead, like the eye of the wall.
Yeah, he's Fall.
Right.
False Paul.
Yeah, that's just a bunch of nonsense that he died in a car accident.
But it's like a conspiracy theory video or whatever. It's like George Harrison's like death tapes telling the story of how like Paul McCartney died or whatever on the way to a recording studio and this and that. And that's what why there's all these subliminal things in each record. But it's really, really cool because some of the things are factual because I have all the vinyls. So I'd go back and like, I'd hit the rewind button and then I'd hear it. And I'm like, well, that's weird, but I don't know.
It's like the 9/11 conspiracy theorists.
Yeah.
I mean, you can, there's correlation, but it doesn't mean that's
true.
It's fact. Yeah.
And we should point out when you say albums, you mean real albums like vinyl.
Yeah.
That you can actually listen to backwards.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Not a CD.
Yeah.
All my stuff. I have more vinyl than I do digital or CDs.
And that was an age unto itself when you had vinyl.
It's coming back. It's coming back. I feel like it's coming back. More than CDs are.
Oh, yeah.
It's like streaming or vinyl.
I think vinyl will be around for, ever. I don't know, I'm going to risk sounding ignorant here, but probably forever.
Yeah, I hope so.
Because it has that classic feeling.
Yeah, when you put the needle down on the record, it sounds like a campfire. Like you're sitting around a campfire. It's got the little crackle, and you're like, this is nice. And then the album starts, and it hits you.
It's a nice warmth.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a warm sound.
It's a beautiful thing. You can't get that with CDs or streaming. It's just direct stop and play.
Well, I'm dating myself, but I grew up with albums.
Yeah. I feel it.
So what do you think the next step is for Paul?
Retire.
He'll probably tour, I think. Probably.
He's probably going to tour. I hope he doesn't stop playing music, because personally, I want to go see him live someday when this whole COVID thing like dies down a little bit. It's probably not going to go away anytime soon, but I want to go see him live just to be like, I saw Paul McCartney, you know?
Yeah, I would like to, but still, it's really mind-blowing to me. I don't know what this says about me. I mean, I haven't done anything even remotely close to being comparable to anything he will ever do in his life.
So, that's probably, I think you just said his response. If I was to say this album sucked, I think that would be his response to me. He's like, what the hell?
That's a fallacy, though.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that doesn't have any grounds. You could say that, but that's a fallacy.
Yeah.
Just because I didn't do the same as you doesn't mean I can't give a honest
my opinion.
Critique, like objectively coming from a musical point of view, but like not the musical point of view, but like the coming from, I guess, a psychological or philosophical point of view. And also, I think the one argument that would stand up here is I'm not 78 years old, but what the hell causes a person to what causes a person
deep breath
to do something like this, like this album, and think and be surrounded by all these people and not be able to have the sense of, I mean, somebody's ear my gosh, I can't even put it into words. It's so frustrating. So I'm going to go back here. So like what we just said, Paul has the credentials of like a legendary musician, one of the greatest, you know, songwriters, probably the greatest songwriter of all time. Potentially, you could make an argument.
Schubert. I think that's what's why.
That? Schubert.
Schubert, greatest songwriter of all time. Well, Paul could make a fight for that position, is what I'm saying, right? At least he's at least top 10, let's say.
In rock and roll.
So you would think his ear would have to live up to that. So I'm using that argument against him.
Yeah.
How come he can't tell with this amazing ear and all this backlog of amazing music? Mm-hmm. How come he can't tell that this is not good?
So let me rephrase that question if I can, right?
Yeah,
correct me if I'm wrong. What would compel a person with his knowledge of music and his background in writing, what would compel him to put out such mediocrity?
Yes. How could he? I mean,
this is that song.
There's two answers to this, maybe, that would make sense. Either one, he doesn't care, or two, his age has affected him,
or his comfortability could be three.
Like, but it could be that doesn't, yeah, third one,
his comfort doesn't affect his knowledge of music.
It does. I think it does.
You think so?
I think so. Yeah, I think that one person, getting back to the idea of complacency, that people praise you so often, and you think that almost everything you produce is okay.
Yeah.
I mean, look at all the artists in history who just stagnated into their old age.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Wordsworth was not the poet at 70 that he was at 20, 25.
Mm-hmm. He didn't have the fight. He didn't have to fight against
anything. Not sure what it was.
There was no uphill battle or struggle or anything. Or
Mozart was still growing when he was, you know, when he died. Mozart was still advancing as a musician, producing what would probably become romantic music, even though he was in the classical age.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Beethoven produced a fair amount of mediocrity, but he moved beyond that into this transcendent period in his last years, that he was producing stuff that was absolutely unbelievable, and it took half a century for people to catch up to it. Bach, as we mentioned before, was writing masterworks at 65. So why do we get these people who continue to grow and grow and grow, whereas other people, they grow for a while and they stagnate? And I would suggest that the stagnation is more the norm than the progression. It takes a real incredible willpower on an individual's part to move beyond, to continue to grow when they're 50 and 60.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm saying that from a person who is in that age group.
Mm-hmm. But, I mean, I don't see that complacency in you. I mean, even though, you know, you don't have the level of fame that Paul McCartney does, I don't think that you'll ever become complacent in anything that you do.
Well, I appreciate that. because I continue to study the masters and learn from them and try to grow as an artist.
So that tells me that potentially he's lost interest.
I'm not sure I go that far.
If that's the case, then he wouldn't have made an album.
Yeah, I'm actually really happy that he actually, you know, had the desire to make an album. I think that's really commendable. The fact that it's not a really good album, I haven't listened to it, okay? So I'm just going about what you two say.
Yeah.
Right? But the fact that he actually wanted to produce an album, I think is quite commendable. Because he could have just sat in his derriere, uh-huh, you know, and watched the clouds pass over Central Park and been very content. You know, drink martinis and, you know, pass out in the early evening. He could have done that.
Yeah. That's true.
I mean, that's a valid point, but I mean,
it's because we have high hopes. We've heard things that he's come out with before, and then you expect it to be. It's just like you said earlier. I guess his biggest enemy is his younger self. You know what I mean? He's trying. His biggest competition is his younger.
His biggest competition is his own fame.
Yeah, that too. But
he's a product of his younger self.
Yeah, trying to compete with his younger self, trying to still be relevant to his younger self.
Or maybe he still thinks he's his younger self.
I think if he did, he would have, I don't know. But to me, like what this tells me, I mean, your point's really valid, Sean. But to me, when I hear this, I hear somebody that wants to be normal, doesn't want to, and you can go back to McCartney 1. Paul McCartney has wanted to be normal, not a Beatle, since McCartney 1. I guess I'm contradicting myself by talking about humility here. Yeah. Because maybe he is actually humble. This is a different theory here.
Our thoughts
because
tonight.
He hasn't wanted to be. I mean, he was always running away, you know, long and winding road.
Yeah.
Let's go out and live in the woods somewhere. Mm-hmm. And then he writes McCartney 1 on a 4-track at home by himself.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have, you know, he's like, oh, all these songs are about my kids. Mm-hmm. That's what he says about, or it's about my family. So to me, this is an uninspired album because realistically, all he wants to do is just be a grandfather or a father.
Mm-hmm.
But he's had to live under this name of Paul McCartney.
Oh, the Beatle spotlight.
The Beatle, yeah. And George talks about that. I mean, he's like, you know, it's like he said he couldn't take it anymore. And maybe George came to that revelation much sooner, which would make sense because he does seem to have more, or he did seem to have more presence of mind at a younger age. And mm-hmm. I don't know if Paul ever did come to that sense, but it seems to me that this is an uninspired album. Because if somebody had, and again, I'm not 78, but if somebody had any sense of inspiration, there would be some, there's no emotion behind this shit. Mm. I'm sorry, there isn't.
I mean, maybe that's why.
He just wants to be a dad and a grandfather.
Yeah.
So if you could, to sort of defend Paul in a indirect way, how many artists can you think of that were still advancing and producing masterworks well into their 70s and 80s? Now, I threw out a couple names before. Bach, for instance, William Butler Yeats. Claude Monet would be another example.
Da Vinci
would be another example. And Michelangelo would also be an example, yeah. Right? Michelangelo was, I think it was Michelangelo on his deathbed said his last words were, I'm still learning.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And also Socrates is another example as well. Even though you wouldn't call his work art, but the way they come down to us in Plato's dialogues, those are artistic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think you're right. I mean, there are those that always hold on to that sense. But
they're the rarity.
Yeah, it's rare. It really is. And sometimes maybe they're like freaks of nature, like Da Vinci or whatever.
So in an indirect way, I'm actually defending Paul.
How so?
Well, I don't know. What little I've heard of the album, I don't think very highly of it. But again, I've only listened to it peripherally. But that makes him more the norm than the exception. And the exceptions the Da Vinci's, the Yeats, mm-hmm. the Monets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They're the exceptions.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm not expecting a white album or anything here, but like, you know, something a little bit more listenable would make sense.
Yeah.
That's my opinion. I'm going to get death threats because of this episode, by the way. Should we do our final thoughts?
Well, it is an honest opinion.
Yeah.
Oh,
you know,
thanks.
From a musician who's played a lot of music and listened to a lot of music. And listened to a lot of music critically, not just haphazardly. Yeah. Not just, can I tap my foot to it?
Yeah. Listen to a lot of Beatles music.
You both, a lot more than I have.
Yeah.
Have really listened to a lot of Beatles music.
We have all of their whole entire anthology.
I mean, Zach, when I come in, oftentimes you're listening to the Beatles in the back.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. And I can sing it and play it and drum to it. It's my go-to.
Yeah, I mean, we kind of know the music almost inside and out.
And you play it.
And we play it. And we know how to play it.
You play a lot of the songs.
And we've covered their songs and played them and sang them and did all of our own renditions on them.
So you know the mechanics of the song.
Yeah. But that's probably why we have such a high expectation of what we think that we're going to get, and then we get what we get.
Well, it's Paul McCartney.
Yeah. But so, I don't know. There's nothing I can do about it. My opinions don't really matter. I'm just an ant on a
Yeah, there's
hill.
Nothing anything that anybody that could do about it. Yeah, of course.
I love Paul McCartney regardless. I like 4 or 5 tracks off this album. But the other stuff I feel like is filler. But yeah. And Ram's my favorite album from Paul McCartney.
Any thoughts,
It's
Sean?
Still going to be my favorite album.
Well, if I had any thoughts, and again, I haven't listened to the album, so I won't comment on the album. But I will repeat what I said before. I just think it's commendable that he actually wanted to put out an album.
Yeah,
and I think he didn't have to, right? And I think it's commendable that he wanted to put out an album because of these. It seems like he wanted, if I'm listening to what you guys told me, he wanted to put out the album because of these troubled times with COVID.
Yeah,
so we had
to
a positive,
make people happy.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the notation that's right. Important,
and it's certainly. What, speaking of your reactions to it, if it did not make you happy, at least made you. Eager to hear the album.
Oh, yeah.
Right? We listened to it all day, and here we are doing a podcast about it. That's how much we care about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you care about Paul McCartney and what he produces.
And he's never met me, and I've never met him, but here we are.
And along those reasons, I think it's commendable, and whether or not it's a good or bad album,
mm-hmm.
I have no immediate judgment. I haven't delved into it deeply enough, but... I think for a guy who's 78 years old who could easily watch the sunset without doing anything.
It's a good album for a 78-year-old.
I won't comment on that, but just the fact that he did it, I think is
the thought. It's the thought that counts.
That's amazing.
Yeah. That was funny. His face. He was like, I put you on the spot there, Sean. Didn't even give you a warning.
I'm going to say, I think, so, you know, when you listen to Spotify over the course of the year, you know, they give you like your top listen to songs of that year based off of how many times you listen to it or how many hours or minutes you listen to that song.
Mm-hmm.
And they give you that whole playlist. And I think out of that playlist, even including the Beatles songs, most of the songs I listened to, or a huge portion of those songs, were very Paul heavy songs, if not pure Paul McCartney wing songs.
Mm-hmm.
So I think now, when I was younger, in my earlier 20s, I used to, in my early 20s, I should say, I used to identify more with John.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I would still say John's my favorite Beatle, but now I over the years, now being married and stuff, I identify more with Paul, and I think I like Paul better as a musician.
Mm-hmm.
Overall.
But didn't he teach John how to play guitar?
That's what the statistics say, at least for me.
Yeah.
So, I gotta say, Paul, if you listen to this, I'm not trying to rag on you.
We love you.
Our thoughts tonight. Everyone have a good night.